Wonderful to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Coming up next hour, Film Week. Our critics tell us about the Fast and Furious spinoff Hobbs and Shaw. Dwayne Johnson, Jason Statham, and Idris Elba star. Also a documentary about the late actor Anton Yelchin, so appreciated for his work on screen and also just very appreciated as a person. Love Antosha, the documentary which takes a look at his life. His friends are interviewed in the film. And the new Canadian film Loose, which stars Kelvin Harrison Jr., Naomi Watson, Octavia Spencer. We'll hear about that film as well. Film Week at 11 o'clock here on 89.3 KPCC. Well, maybe you caught the statistic showing that among millennials, home buying is lagging what previous generations were at for the same age. So the question is, you know, is this a generational difference that we're seeing, sort of a generational cultural gap between those that have come before and millennials just not being as interested in home buying? Is it a hangover from the recession? Is it stagnated wages? Is it just simply a shortage of houses that is at play here? We're going to hear from experts as to the reasons for the lower rate of home ownership for millennials. With us from USC, Lusk Center for Real Estate, Chair at Lusk, Director of the Program there, Richard Green. Richard, good to have you with us again this morning. What do you think are the reasons for this?
I think you did a really good job of listing them, Larry. I would add a couple of others. First of all, the rate of marriage among millennials is much lower than previous generations there. We'll see whether they ultimately get married, but it's still the case. If you look at a typical 35-year-old millennial, their marriage rate is much lower than it was for previous generations. And the number one predictor of whether somebody is a homeowner is whether they're married or not. It may be, you know, people get married to have homes. Maybe they have homes to get married. But the point is that these are two things that go together. And so this, at minimum, delay and maybe permanent non-coupling, I think, is having an enormous influence on the homeownership rate. The second thing is...
Can you hold that thought? Because I just wanted to ask a follow-up on the marriage rate. For people that, couples that live together, are they significantly less likely to buy something? If they're a long-term living together couple, so compare more apple to apple, long-term living together versus married couple, is there a significant homeownership difference there?
So that's a great question, and the problem is with the way the census is set up, it's not possible to know whether people of the opposite sex living together but not married have been living together for a long time or not a long time.
Okay.
So and the share of households that fall in that category is still relatively small. So I don't think that's a great influencer, but it is an excellent question.
And I was wondering, well, maybe people that are less likely to get married but live together are otherwise less likely to commit. Home ownership's a commitment too, like marriage, so maybe they go hand in hand. Anyway, your second point, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and then the second point is the millennial generation is much more filled with people of color. And I think we have a housing finance system that is in many ways still stuck where it was 30 years ago, despite all the technology that we see and so on. And I'll give a couple of specific examples of that. First of all, the housing finance system discounts the income of people who are independent contractors. So this is a segue to your last.
Yeah, I was going to say part of the last segment.
And people, you know, Latinos and African Americans are much more likely to work in contract jobs than in wage, what I call W-2 jobs.
Or in the informal economy, right, where it's the income can't be documented.
Right. Well, there's that. There's the informal economy, but there's also, and I think it probably is asking lenders a little much to ask them to take that into account, but they could certainly stop discounting. If somebody has been a contractor for 2 or 3 years and has earned a steady income, there's no reason to believe they're any less reliable as a credit risk than people who have salaried income. And I've actually done some analysis along that line, and you can show that these are very reliable sources of income. And yet, That's discounted. And so if you're a person who has that kind of income, and among Latinos and African Americans, we see more people with that kind of income, it's harder for you to get a loan. And so, I mean, right now, I don't think credit's the big issue. I think it's just the cost of housing. But if you go back 3, 4, 5 years ago, when there were great opportunities to buy homes, because house prices were lower, there were people who I think were very good credit risks, but weren't able to get into the housing market. And those were disproportionately people of color. And so I think we need to rethink how we do lending. And again, I want to emphasize, I don't want to go back to the days where we made dangerous loans to people. But we can find ways using analytics to make safe loans to non-traditional borrowers that will allow them access to the housing market, who I think haven't had it. And so I think those two things, beyond everything you said, is right. I think we are still recovering from the crisis. There is the issue that wages have not kept up with house prices. That's a really big problem, particularly for young people. But the other stuff, too.
Richard Green, USC, directs the Lusk Center for Real Estate. He's also in the Obama administration as senior advisor at the Department of Housing and Urban Development. If you are a millennial who is interested in buying a house, I'd be interested to hear what your experience is, what some of the challenges are. Is you know, part of it just having a life partner or a spouse, both financially and in terms of getting credit, and making the commitment that, you know, you're going to stay in a particular location long term? 866-893-KPCC. And what sort of impediments are there for you in buying a house if you want to do it? But what are the biggest impediments? 866-893-KPCC. Also with us, economist Christopher Thornburg, founding partner of Beacon Economics. Chris, good morning. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Richard.
So let's start first of all about just your overall analysis of this. Do you think that something different's going on with millennials than previous generations?
Yes, I think so. But we have to be careful not to conflate two situations. And a little bit of the conversation today has done so. Yes, homeownership rates are down for people in the millennial years, say the 35 to 44 age group. But they're also down for the 45 to 54 age group, that is Gen Xers, and the 55 to 64 group, which is a combination of boomers. It's really only the 65 plus crowd for which homeownership rates have been maintained over the course of the last 10, 15 years or so. So we are dealing with issues specific to the millennials, and I think a lot of that goes to the fact that they tend to just make decisions in life later, marry, have kids, buy a home later. But then there's the broader question of credit availability. So Richard and I think, agree on most things, but the one issue here, I think we're on a slight disagreement, is the idea that it's about housing costs. I don't think so. I think if you look at data from the American Community Survey and the share of income used to pay for a house, whether it's rented or owned, that number has been going down over the last few years in the United States. The issue here is after Dodd-Frank, there were a series of rules put into place that simply made it very difficult for banks to lend to higher risk borrowers. Yes, that is mostly people of color. I think a lot of those folks are in that category, and that goes back to something else Richard was saying that I agree with. But in general, if you look at the mortgage markets over the last decade, the median credit score for a borrower has been above 750. Prior to that, it was always about 700. So these rules that were put into place to, quote unquote, protect buyers back after the Great Recession had ended, and we were in recovery period, those rules actually, in many ways, didn't help borrowers. They hurt borrowers because they prevented a lot of people from being able to get into the housing market at a great point in time for them to have gotten back into it when prices were relatively low.
We'll continue our conversation with Chris Thornburg, founding partner Beacon Economics, Richard Green, USC, where he directs the Lusk Center for Real Estate. Love to hear from you. If you're a millennial who wants to buy a house, what are the challenges you're facing when you look at credit or other factors? 866-893-KPCC. Back in 1 minute. Good to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. We're looking at the statistics showing that among millennial would-be home buyers, the percentage of people actually buying homes lower than in previous generations at the same point in time. Economist Chris Thornburg pointing out that except for those 65 and older, every generational demo shows a decrease in home ownership from previously. We're also looking at some of the challenges in getting credit, delayed or not occurring marriages, which factor in economically, of course, because that goes hand in hand with home buying, long-term commitment, and having financial resources from a two-income household. Asking millennials if you have something to share about your experience attempting to buy a house, I welcome it. Donnie in Venice, good to have you with us. What are you finding trying to buy a house?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like we're competing. You know, my girlfriend and I were in our early 30s. We got the funding, but we're competing with developers, foreign investment, a lot of people who want to tear some of the houses down on the west side that we'd love to get into as is. And so it's just something that we can't seem to compete with. And it's just been an ongoing process, even though we want to get into a house.
Yeah. And Donnie, one of the things we see that maybe will help you going forward is that far fewer foreign investors are buying real estate. Richard Green, is that having any sort of effect in freeing up the inventory?
You know, it is, it has a small effect, but as much as it's true that in particular Chinese investment is way down in residential real estate, it was never that huge a part of the market to begin with. So sort of at their peak, the Chinese were buying about 2% of the houses in the U.S. And, you know, that's dropped something like 80, 90%. Since then, there are other foreign investors who come in the market. Probably a little more important in California than it is nationally, but I don't think it's a big deal. What is more interesting to me is you're starting to see investment companies building single-family houses to lease out. And so sort of part of the new construction market, which was typically would go to home buyers, is now being reserved for the rental markets. But again, more generically, we're building so few houses right now that the fact that a small set of the few houses we're building are not going to home buyers is probably pretty second order in the overall scheme of things.
All right.
I think Donnie's point, which is the correct one, is we just don't have enough houses out there.
And Donnie, you're looking on the west side of L.A., is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, and that's another challenge. I mean, I think for a lot of people at you and your girlfriend's age of 31, even going back, you know, 20, 30 years ago, buying on the West Side at that age would be a real challenge. And I know it sounds like you have good income, you and your girlfriend. But Chris, you want to comment also about some of the regional differences here?
Well, that's exactly right. I was going to say that we got to be careful again to talk about the difference between California and the national trends. California has been unable to build sufficient amount of housing for, a couple decades now. And the impact of that on prices is becoming profound. When you simply don't have enough inventory, the bidding war you get into pits the most deep-pocketed against people trying to make their way. And unfortunately, what that means for the state is a lot of folks like the caller, a lot of these sort of young, upwardly mobile people who represent the future of the state are choosing to leave. It is a huge problem, and I was very disappointed with how little came out of the last legislative session to deal with this.
Let's talk about with Chris in Valley Village. Speaking of looking out of state, I understand that's what you're doing.
Yes, sir. The housing costs are much cheaper elsewhere, so I plan on buying in Texas instead of in California. Also, my girlfriend makes more money than I do as a server, but they won't take her income into account. But since I have a 9-to-5, they're taking that into account. But she makes more than me, and that can't go towards our loan increase.
Yeah. So even though she's contributing to your household income, that's a very good point, Chris. I appreciate it. Thanks. That plays into what Richard Green was talking about, the difficulty getting lenders to acknowledge that sort of independent contractor income. Justin in Pasadena, what's your experience?
Yeah, so we're looking to try to buy a home right now, but I think there are two major factors that are preventing us from building up enough of a down payment. One is just the current cost of housing and paying rent at $2,500 a month plus. And the other is really student loans. We're both servicing six figures of student loan debt, which despite being professionals is hard to keep up with.
Great point, Justin. Chris, quick comment on student loans.
It's out there. It's no doubt. But again, I want to be clear that when you look at the average person graduating from college today, they're graduating about $30,000 in debt. So I think it is an issue for some households, but I think it's been over-exaggerated as a source of the changes.
Jeffrey writes on the AirTalk page, millennials I know, including my children, are avoiding buying homes because, one, they don't have a sense of permanence and where they'll be living long-term. Two, very few jobs have a long-term guarantee, and paying a mortgage requires financial stability. Three, given the two above circumstances, millennials get greater satisfaction in other areas, traveling, socializing, etc. And four, they're not having children, or at least delaying it by 10 years or more. By then, homeownership isn't something they feel they need. Richard Green, quick response to Jeffrey's post.
Yeah, well, I think Jeffrey nailed a whole lot of what's going on. The one thing, though, that's a little bit of a myth is the permanence of jobs. It turns out if you look at the average length of time people have spent in their jobs, it hasn't changed all that much over the last 30 years. It's one of these things that we think has been a profound change, which is people used to work for the same company for 30 years, and now they don't. But actually, people are staying in jobs for about as long as they always have.
That's interesting. Of course, they used to get transferred by those employers all over the country in the past, too. Richard Green of USC, Chris Thornburg, Beacon Economics, thank you both so much for joining us. AirTalk is produced by our senior producer, Fiona Ng. She leads a team that includes producers Matt D'Angelo-Antonio and Natalie Chudnovsky. This week, Lindsay Wright and Janaki Mehta helped us, our news apprentices Matt Bynum and Ari Saperstein, and our engineer is Parker McDaniels. Coming up, it's Film Week here on 89.3 KPCC. We'll tell you about it momentarily.